They believe in teachers' unions. We believe in teachers.
What they do, they smile in your face.
For the time they want to take your place, the backstabbers.
Backstabbers, they smile in your face.
For the time they want to take your place, the backstabbers.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. So yesterday, the California Supreme Court made its decision in the Vergara versus State of California case, which was billed as the tenures case. Should teachers have the right to tenure? Is this the evil boogeyman that we hear in Pennsylvania and other states across the country? Is this the end of education as we know it, because you can never fire a bad teacher? The reality is due process is what it is. And what this ruling to me says is it's not tenure. It's not the teachers. It's lazy administrators. And here to talk a little bit about this case and the decision, I've asked Eric Hines to come talk with us. He's the president of the California Teachers Association. Eric, thanks for taking time for us.
Well, thank you, Eric. Good afternoon.
So we can't fire bad teachers, Eric. You can't get rid of the really bad ones.
Well, I tell you, you know, this lawsuit was filed by another billionaire front group, you know, same as trying to get their agenda through that they couldn't get through the initiative process because the voters in California consistently said no, they haven't been able to get it through the legislature. So now they're trying to litigate their way to attack teacher unions and union workers in general. And this time they failed. And we're very happy that they did. This bill attacked teacher due process and seniority rights, saying that it was so hard to fire a bad teacher that students, especially in low-income school or in schools in low-income, low socioeconomic areas that serve primarily minority children, were denied their constitutional right to a good education. Which, of course, is nonsense.
It is nonsense. But and never mind the created crises like we see in many of our urban centers with massive budget cuts and chaos like we see in Chicago and Philadelphia. Never mind that. It's this obscure thing called tenure and due process for teachers that's screwing everything up, right?
Well, you know, the lower court, they actually won because Judge True was the closest to a kangaroo court I've seen. And he wrote a decision which was a lot of opinion but low on facts. And the appellate court in California saw that and unanimously overturned his decision. And they said, rightfully so, that the statutes that were being attacked here, they had not proved a connection between those statutes and a bad teacher in front of a student. And in fact, it was the district and the administrators that made that choice where to place that teacher and evaluation. And the Supreme Court yesterday refused to review the case, and I think they made exactly the right decision, and so now it is thankfully dead.
So at the end of this, it's dead in the courts, but in the public opinion, you still have people going, there are bad teachers in the classrooms, and you don't want bad teachers, and I don't want bad teachers in the classroom, but there's got to be a process to make sure that we weed out ones who aren't doing well and to help those who are struggling, right?
Well, of course, you know, I am a teacher. I'm an elementary school teacher, and nobody wants a bad teacher in front of a student. What, in fact, we've done in California is we have many, we just streamlined the process for letting go teachers who are not getting satisfactory evaluations, and it's only about an 8-month process. And in fact, the reason it was taking so long to let go a teacher because of due process was because of districts had the ability, and what they would do is they would continue to add new charges as the process was going along, which meant more depositions, which were unlimited, and you know, you can read, I guess, billable hours into that, and that's what made it very expensive. And so we streamlined the process in California 2 years ago, which the union helped craft in a way that was fair and that actually helped so that teachers weren't left dangling for years without knowing what their employment status was going to be, but also built into that process a chance for teachers to get better and to get the support they need through a peer assistance and review program. And so we really were looking, you know, and what the nice thing about this particular case being dead is we can now then focus our energy on what actually helps improve student learning and improve teaching.
So, you know, at the end of this, though, what I'm seeing, especially with the attack on seniority rights and tenure, this isn't just about California. It's not just about Pennsylvania. It's a national strategy. Really, it's not even about education, in my view. It's really about destroying unions, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And they've been very focused on private sector unions for many years, and have been, we see with union density now in the private sector, you know, how successful they've been. And now they're coming after public sector unions. And we've seen in some states like Wisconsin and Michigan and many places, and certainly the attacks in Pennsylvania, what happens when they are successful. And we're not going to let that happen in California.
Good on you. But here's the thing. You know, that frame of a bad teacher kind of sticks. And look, I went through all through school. I don't ever remember having a bad teacher. I remember having some that inspired me more and some not so much, but may have inspired friends of mine. So I think that subjective frame of a bad teacher is something that has to be addressed.
Well, a thing like everything else, you know, it makes a good soundbite. But if you really want to focus on improving students and making sure there's a qualified teacher in front of every student at all times, then you do the kinds of things that promote that. You pay them a good salary. You make a stable system that gives them voice. And then you give them the kind of professional development they need. You resource the schools so that they're well-resourced and they have good nominal class sizes. And you do the kinds of things that actually work. Attacking teachers and attacking their rights to due process and seniority is a wrong-headed approach and doesn't do anything to improve student learning.
So at the end of this, you think this is the end then?
It's the end of this case because it's now done with the Supreme Court. It's not the end of attacks. I think we're going to continue to see the attacks. In fact, I would suspect they'll probably intensify. They'll may move to our legislature for a while or through the initiative process that we have here in California. We've seen it before, but we're going to continue to work with our labor partners to make sure that the rights of all workers in California are protected and that workers are treated fairly and given a good, strong voice. And whatever the attacks are, you know, we've got lots of billionaires in California and they love spending the money. They got deep pockets, but you know, they're going to have to come through us first.
Yeah, and when it starts there, it'll eventually end up here. So nationally, what does this decision mean, if anything, to places like Pennsylvania or Illinois or other states?
Sure. Well, we just came off the heels of the Friedrichs versus CTA, where the Supreme Court was asked to overturn 40 years of fair share laws, which have been working. And so this is kind of a double win for us and certainly for the workers and the students. But California, you know, is a breeding ground for many different kinds of ideas. After all, we gave the rest of the country Proposition 13 and tax reform. For that, I still apologize. But our system is big enough that if we can continue to do the right things here, we think it'll help influence the national debate and the national voice. And I think that's a good thing, that for a national trend. And maybe we can turn the tide back. I think we're already beginning to see a kind of a renaissance in thinking about unions and about unions in general. And I think that's a good thing.
I agree with you. But, you know, a lot of the same frames that were in this case, we're seeing popping up in legislative ideas around the country. The idea that, for instance, seniority shouldn't be something that's taken into account when we're laying staff off. That's a big issue here in Pennsylvania that the Republicans are trying to push through. And I would argue you want to keep your most experienced people because you want to have that base of knowledge.
Absolutely. I mean, it's like, how many professions do you know where experience doesn't really matter? It just doesn't make any sense. And you do see these attacks. I think they're from a national playbook. You know, it could be ALEC. It could be, you know, whatever group. It could be, you know, I don't know, the Billionaires Boys Club who sit around and I don't know what their, you know, we already know what their motivation is. But certainly we have our work cut out ahead of us. But I think we can learn from each other on how best to fight these attacks. And we can also, if we stand together as unions, as labor, and, you know, as workers, I think we have a chance of turning this back and really beginning to set the country again on a little bit better path than this kind of path we've been on since the Reagan administration in the 80s.
Yeah. Yeah, and also, as I've been saying for a long time, changing the frame that teaching is like factory work. Because, you know, with that kind of, well, we get the cheapest person in there, anyone can do it kind of mentality, then you minimize and you diminish that profession, and then it's easy to attack, isn't it?
Well, we've seen under the last 15 years of federal education law, this kind of one-size-fits-all approach, scripted curriculums, pacing guides, that really were trying to turn teachers into teaching technicians. And therefore, even with models like Teach for America, where it just didn't, you know, 5 weeks of training and they threw you in a classroom with a script, and that was, I think, intentional. And part of that was to create a frame that, you know, if we just give everybody doing the same thing on the same page, then it doesn't matter if you burn them out in a couple of years. We can just replace you with some other young, fresh person and, you know, well-intentioned. But it creates a lot of low-paid workers and a lot of churn in the system. But we know from research that's exactly the opposite of what needs to happen, especially for communities that are most vulnerable in our society. Those students need the stability of teachers and other educators and school employees who they can build relationships with. That's, for many of them, is the only stability they have in their lives. And that's when they start to really learn and can start moving and improving their education.
Right, but that's hard work, Eric. That takes actual work. It's much easier to come up with a silver bullet, like, you know, we can have online learning, or we can do charters, or we can do all of these other things that, you know, cost a lot of money for profiteers to line their pockets with. What you're talking about is actual, real hard work.
Well, you know, I always figure that if you want to improve student learning and improve the public education system, you do the things that actually improve student learning and improve the public education system. We know that all these other essentially contracting out the work or privatizing doesn't work. We've seen it in many cases. There's no place where it has worked. There's no research supporting that it does work. We actually do. We need to do the work and put our nose and put in the resources that are necessary. It's good for not just for those students and their education, but it's good for our economy, because then we create a workforce that creates, you know, thriving places like Silicon Valley or the next biotech industry, or even, you know, better manufacturing jobs, or, you know, whatever there is. But it's good for our economy that we create a good, stable, unionized public education system.
And thank goodness you guys are there, because at the end of the day, without the California Teachers Association, both the bad decisions with Friedrich and this one sail through, and teachers are at the will and the whim of, well, whomever.
Well, I do want to do a shout out to my brothers and sisters in the Pennsylvania Education Association. I know they're doing great work there, and our labor brothers and sisters around the country. We're very fortunate in California that we have our economy has turned around, and partially, by the way, because of the work we did raising taxes on the wealthiest 5%, and we're now in the process of extending those taxes in the next November ballot with Proposition 55, and so that's brought in money to our schools that have helped stabilize the kind of the bleeding that had been going on since the Great Recession. And so we're lucky that we've elected a lot of the right people to office. That makes a big difference. And so voting is extremely important, and especially the labor vote, that we vote for people who actually look out for our interests instead of some of these yahoos that are running. We need to really engage in the process to make sure that we work to do those things. And that's what makes it possible then to make positive steps and focus on what actually works and what's right.
There you go. Eric, I appreciate you taking some time for us. Look forward to talking to you again.
It is my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much. Eric Hines, president of the California Teachers Association, CTA.org, the website. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. Listen to the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.